So before starting, you know, we want to ask you something. What really motivates you to get up every day and do the work that you're doing in the Web3 space?
I would say, honestly, a lot of it is my team. Like, I love working with my co-founder, John. I really love working with all the other very, very smart people at Succinct. We all work actually together in person. So the energy is always very exciting. We're always whiteboarding and solving problems together. For me, I've always been really motivated by like the people I work with first and foremost, because that's, you know, day to day, the most fun part. And so I just really love this Succinct team. And that's a really big motivation.
Hey, Uma. Yeah, great to see you today in SF. So, you know, speaking of San Francisco, it's changed quite a bit. And it's good to see that you guys are actually an in-person working team, you know, especially after COVID, this, you know, remote work took over. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how the team actually got together initially in SF and how you kept them together even after COVID and continued on, you know, working together in office.
Yeah, so we actually started the company after the initial like COVID wave. So I had been living in SF, and then during COVID I moved away, and then after I came back, and there were some people who are starting to work together in person again. My co-founder, John, also was living in the Bay Area at the time. So we were already both here. And it kind of made sense to just keep on staying here. And some of our first employees were also here. We really strongly believe in in-person work. I think that's a really big reason why we've been able to like build so fast and ship all the things we have shipped. So, you know, from day one, we were like, we're in SF. We want to like build a company in person. It's going to be in SF.
That's incredible. What was the early days like, and how did you guys start Succinct?
Yeah, so there's this research lab called 0x Park. That's kind of a, you know, sister research foundation to the Ethereum Foundation. And I know one of the co-founders of 0x Park from school. And he was actually the one that got me into ZK. I'd always been super into math, but he had told me about this really cool field of cryptography, and I learned about it and I just went down the rabbit hole. 0x Park actually had like a residency where, you know, over the summer there was a co-working space where a bunch of cryptography people got together and were working together. And my co-founder and I met there.
Super. I've heard of 0x Park. It's definitely super, super legit. What is you and your co-founder's background? Did you meet in school, or did you actually meet at this 0x Park residency? Yeah, what's the what's the idea behind the early versions of Succinct?
Yeah, we didn't meet in school. We actually went to different schools. But yeah, we met over the summer at this like co-working space. We were working on a project together in ZK bridging. So that was kind of some of our early work. And we really enjoyed working together. He's like the smartest person I've ever worked with, for sure. And so I really enjoyed working with him. We both really enjoyed working on ZK. I think we both had a very mathematical background. So I was a double major in math and CS. And then I'd always done like a lot of math. And he'd also done a lot of math. So that kind of ended up being our connection to ZK and also to the company and to each other.
That's incredible. Math people like each other. Great minds, you know, think alike, attract each other. Yeah, that's great beginning. Can you elaborate a little bit about why your, you know, the mission for Succinct is so important? And also, what are you trying to accomplish in the long run?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think fundamentally, ZK is the only way all of crypto is actually going to scale and be private. You know, decentralization obviously imposes some natural overhead because, you know, everyone has to do the same computation repeatedly. That's kind of why Ethereum is the world computer, but unfortunately, it's kind of a bad world computer because it's very slow and inefficient. And I think ZK is the only way that, you know, all of this stuff is going to scale and really go to global scale and like solve all the problems with making blockchains actually efficient and cheap. So I think ZK is just really important to the story of blockchain and crypto. And then within ZK, we're working on making a ZK VM called SP1, where basically it makes ZK really easy to use. You just write normal Rust code, and then you can use ZK. So historically, ZK has always been regarded as very important, but it was really difficult to use. Like, you had to be a genius cryptographer. You had to have a really large team. You had to have a PhD. And it was very difficult and only accessible to very few teams and developers. And then with what we built, now anyone can use ZK in an afternoon. You just write normal code. So I'm really passionate about it because we, like John and I, my co-founder, we used to be the people that were writing all these ZK circuits and doing all the complicated ZK stuff. And we realized that for ZK to fully realize its potential, there was no way that everyone in the world was going to learn all this complicated cryptography. And so then when we built SP1 and our ZK VM, we were in some ways solving our own problem by making ZK super easy. And I think because I had done a lot of ZK stuff before, and now I use SP1 and I see how much easier it makes ZK, it's kind of a magical experience even for me, because it's, I know kind of how hard things were before and now how easy things are. And kind of the motivation is, now that ZK is so easy, it can see, like, it can realize all its potential and actually scale crypto and be used in every rollup and every bridge and like all the contexts that it needs to be used in.
Yeah, ZK has been, you know, just such a obscure kind of concept to most people. And there's a lot of, you know, barrier of entry. So what's your time frame on actually getting it to the market? Because there has been historically so many attempts on, you know, this ZK VM, and also accessibility to developers type of plays, but they're always kind of delayed. How do you, yeah, what is your time frame for getting to the market and make an impact?
Yeah, I think like you already have a few ZK rollups out there today. And historically, the problem with ZK has been, it's been so complicated that getting to market took a really long time, right? Like, you would have to have this really large team, and then your best engineers would have to be focused on all this cryptography instead of, you know, the things users care about, which is like, how nice is your front end? Like, you know, latency, stuff like that. And so historically, ZK stuff has come to market. It's just come to market a lot later. And then it's like very complicated and burdensome to maintain. I think with what we built at Systinct, now ZK is just as simple as you just write normal Rust code. So it's really easy. And with that, you can actually go to market a lot faster, and it's a lot more maintainable and upgradable. And I think the technology is kind of finally at a point where it's actually easy to use. And now the teams who are building with ZK can just use ZK like without much effort. And then they can like take their product and take all their engineers and focus on like UX and all the other things that matter and use ZK kind of in the background without having to think much about it. So I'm hopeful that, you know, there will be this paradigm shift where now that ZK is finally easy, the go-to-markets will be a lot shorter, and then you'll see ZK everywhere it should be. Yeah, that's how I think about it.
That would be super. Well, what would you say are some of your biggest use cases?
I think the biggest use case for today for ZK is just rollups. I think, you know, obviously Ethereum has this rollup centric roadmap, right? Where like the end game of Ethereum is you have this very decentralized base layer, and then you have all these different rollups for all these different applications, you know, taking transactions, batching them together, generating a ZK proof, verifying it on the base layer. And I think you know, that's kind of like how Ethereum scales. So I think every rollup is going to be a ZK rollup. I think that's super inevitable. Like, ZK is kind of just the end game scaling solution for Ethereum. You know, even Vitalik says this. And then I think all ZK rollups are going to use ZK VMs like SP1, because that's kind of the future of ZK. Is like, ZK is easy. You just import normal Rust code. Like, you know, you don't have to have a huge cryptography team. And then our hope is, you know, our goal is really to build the best ZK VM. SP1. So yeah, that's kind of the biggest use case we're tackling today is just that mission of making every rollup a ZK rollup.
Got it. Can you tell us a little bit about the challenge of building SP1 so far? And how did you overcome them?
Yeah, building SP1 is really hard. It's definitely not an easy feat. I think, again, building SP1 makes ZK easy, but the kind of like trade-off of that is we have to do a lot of really hard stuff. And so there's a lot of challenges. Like, I think really building anything in ZK is difficult. You know, performance is really, really critical. And so you have to be very mindful of performance. The libraries that we use are not, you know, necessarily the most well-documented, the most well-known things in the world. There's only probably hundreds of people working with this stuff. So, you know, it's not like you can just read online tutorials or anything, right? You just like have to go into the code and understand it yourself. So I think there was a lot of challenges. Like, some of the challenges include coming up with like novel ZK algorithms. Like, we were trying to build something that's extremely performant for this particular rollup and bridge use case. And so we had to come up with a lot of algorithms to get the performance that we wanted. So there's like the cryptography side that was hard. Then there's the actual coding it and making sure it is performant. Then there's like putting all the pieces together. So our system in the end, you know, has a lot of moving parts. There's like our core VM. Then we have another system to basically combine a bunch of like these ZK proofs together and then wrap them in something that Ethereum can verify cheaply. So there's like three different stages of our prover pipeline. To get really good performance, we also had to write a GPU version of our prover. So, you know, it's not just like writing normal code and then running it on a CPU. We also had to like, you know, write CUDA and run it on a write a GPU implementation of an SP1 prover. Then you have to actually run this stuff in the cloud in like a distributed setting. So there's definitely like a lot of challenges across the stack that we really had to overcome. I think with, you know, one of the things I really love about crypto is that it is so open. Like all the code is out there because, you know, it has to be for like security and auditability. So, you know, it's awesome that basically our team can just go look at the code and it's fully transparent and fully out there, and we can learn from existing resources and people can also learn from us. Like, a lot of people have forked SP1 and like done their own optimizations or added their own precompiles or, you know, whatever it is. Overall, I think the TLDRs, it was very difficult in many ways. And we just, you know, stayed in the office until 10 p.m. and just learned a lot on the internet.
Since both you and your co-founders are technical, and it sounds like in your day-to-day, there's just so much building. It seems like it's almost always be building. And how do you divide up responsibilities and roles in your company?
That's a good question. Yeah, so both my co-founder and I are very technical. I think these days I try to do less coding, actually. It's kind of my guilty pleasure because, you know, it's always fun to like go into something and optimize it and like instantly see that, oh, it got, you know, 10% faster. I feel like with BD or, you know, other initiatives, you don't get that instant feedback loop of like, oh, I can just like write a few lines and like see something improve. Like, the feedback loop's a lot longer for other functions. These days I do less coding. I'm more focused on like helping our customers. That's like a super top priority. Educating people about ZK. I feel like ZK is still not that well understood. I think the benefits are not that well understood. I think also there's a lot of myths around how difficult it is or how costly or expensive it is. And so kind of like putting the data out there, showing people, oh, it's actually really cheap. It's actually really easy. Your protocol can benefit from it. Every rollup should use ZK. So I think these days I'm focused more on like education, helping our customers, you know, generally like adoption, getting people to use the tech, and, you know, things like that. So that is like my main focus now. But then on the weekends, sometimes when I have like free time, I'll code. But that's more like for my personal fun than anything else.
The thing about SF is that it just feels like, you know, when I'm here, I'm just working all the time. Like even events that I go to or, you know, on the weekends, you know, meeting people, it just always turned into work anyways. How do you balance work and anything, you know, relaxing or fun outside of work in SF?
That is like the popular narrative about SF, is that it's all work all the time and there's nothing to do here. I mean, I think there's a lot of fun stuff to do in SF. Like, you know, there's like hiking and like really beautiful nature. So I actually really like living here. I think there's a lot of stuff you can do here that you can't do in like a lot of other cities. And so, yeah, on the weekends, like I love going outdoors and like skiing and hiking and stuff like that. During the week, it is mostly just work. But I mean, I also really like working and there's a lot of stuff to do. So it's kind of convenient, honestly. We're like always at our office, but it's all very fun. And I think because we're in person, that's also super fun and energetic. I think like if you're just sitting in your bedroom, like working in your apartment all day and all night, I think I couldn't do that because there's just not that much energy. But I think being in person in the office, it's also fun, like, you know, hanging out and like, you know, thinking of like new ideas or just like, you know, playing board games or whatever.
Yeah. I think the difference in SF is, you know, you go on hiking with tech people and you go to Napa Valley with tech people. You play board games with tech people. And so then these conversations are always product anyway. So that feels like work. That's probably what's going on. What is your feeling about SF over the past 4 years? Has things changed? Has people changed? What are some differences?
I think the city was definitely, especially post-COVID, really empty. Like the downtown, there weren't that many people around and stuff. But then more recently, I feel like more people have been coming back and more things are opening up. Although there is still like quite a long way to go. I think a lot of crypto in America right now is in New York. Like it seems really New York centric. I don't know if you guys have noticed that.
Yeah. Why is that?
I don't know, honestly. I think just probably a lot of people moved to New York and it was really fun. And like, you know, everyone has their office in Soho or like Williamsburg and there's a really good community there. So yeah, there's a lot of crypto in New York. We're trying to make SF crypto come back, like, and make it more of a thing. But yeah, I think the gravity of stuff is definitely New York. I also think right now SF's really popular for AI stuff. So actually it's funny you mentioned like, oh, on the weekends, like you're always hanging out with other tech people. For me, like I find the people I hang out with, like they barely know anything about crypto. They don't really understand it. Like I actually don't really talk about work with a lot of my SF friends because like they're all in AI. Like they barely understand what crypto is.
That's why crypto people left.
Yeah, there's just a lot of AI people in SF, and I think some of them are, you know, a lot of them actually regard crypto a bit skeptically. So maybe that's why there's not that many crypto people around in SF anymore.
Yeah, I see SF tech lost about 50% of people, and that includes crypto people. So half of crypto people also left. Maybe a lot of them went to New York, but then the AI community got really big. It's self-selecting because in order to build the best AI, you have to be in SF. So then now it's all AI and a little of other kind of tech. Yeah. Do you think this will change? Do you think SF crypto will come back or... It's game over.
No, I mean, I hope so. We're going to stay here. Yeah, I hope it comes back. I think, you know, we're actually hosting a ZK residency in SF. So we got a nice new office. It's really big. We're hosting in October this like month-long ZK residency where we want a lot of teams to like come and co-work with us and work on ZK stuff. And so, you know, maybe that'll be the start of like SF crypto coming back. I'm not sure. But I hope it does come back. Like, I feel like also the city itself is on a more positive trajectory these days. Like, I feel like the, you know, the city was not in a great spot for a long time. And now it's kind of like people are woken up and like trying to fix, you know, all the problems. So hopefully that also helps people and like wants them to make them want to come back.
Yeah. I really like SF. I've come back and I want to, you know, open office. And also I want to spend more time here. I think it's really high quality. Actually, I'm very impressed. But I actually wanted to ask you, do you think in person working on ZK, especially for ZK, is a game changer compared to a decentralized way of building ZK tech? And why is that?
Yeah, I feel like with any company, it's really dependent on like the founders and like the company culture. And like every company is so different. What works for one company and makes it really special is like very different from what makes another company special. So I feel like I can only speak to like what I love, which is I love waking up in the morning, going to an office and like whiteboarding with people. Like that's what gets me going. That's what makes me happy. I love that in-person interaction. I love learning things with people and in person. So that's like very important to me. And I would say like my co-founder, John, and then a lot of the other people in our company, I think also they chose to work at Sysinc because they also like that stuff. So for us, I think we were able to just build really quickly and ship so much and learn so much because we were in person and there was zero communication overhead. And we were able to do all that stuff together. Now, I think a lot of ZK though is, you know, a lot of the advances have been made by people all across the world, right? You have like the Starkware team in Israel, you have, you know, the Polygon team, very distributed. You have the ZK Sync team in Europe. I mean, there's like so many great people all across the world. And I find that like super beautiful about crypto. Like I think AI, you know, if you want to be at the forefront of AI, you have to kind of move to SF. You maybe have to work at one of three companies. That's a big lab. And that's not available to most people. Like even getting a US visa is really hard for a lot of people. So I think the beauty of crypto is you can just literally be a random person on the internet and you can just contribute to that. Like you can learn all this stuff and you can contribute to it. You know, there's even been some people who've like forked SP1 and added their own things and really understood the system very deeply to an extent where I was like really impressed. It was like, this is really hard stuff. And, you know, they just understood it and they were totally random. I don't even know who they are, actually, in many cases. And I don't think they live in America. So I think the decentralized aspect is something I actually really personally love about crypto a lot. And I think it's really special. But at the same time, I think for us, I also really enjoy being able to have like our pocket of ZK that's like in SF, fully in person. We know each other super well.
Maybe that's your moat, actually. Yeah. So then this is really, really great. You mentioned that you guys are doing this residence-based program, right? I see that's actually happening more now with HF0, you know, this type of program. So then you provide housing for people. So did you go and, you know, rent like a space or this is your office space? How does this program work?
Yeah, so in the end of September and the month of October, we're having a 1-month ZK residency where we just want to bring together like a bunch of ZK builders across the stack. So either people who want to integrate ZK into an existing product or people who are like working on new ZK applications like ZK email or things like that into a space and just have everyone be able to like co-work together. Again, I'm like a really big fan of in-person work. I find that like we can get stuff done 10x faster in person, which is why I wanted to create that space for like, us and like our partners we work with and like a bunch of other people. And then also at a personal level, like my co-founder and I, we met at a similar environment. So I kind of wanted to like recreate it for the, you know, the new generation of today.
Yeah.
And, like, provide them that really like generative, fun environment to like work on all this stuff. So for us, we got like a pretty big office. So, you know, half the office is, you know, we're not big enough to fully fill out the office. So half the office has like space for co-working for all these teams. And then, yeah, we got like a few Airbnbs to provide people with housing. In some cases, like, you know, their company like provides it for them. In other cases, they stay in the Airbnbs. But yeah, mostly the idea is like we just have this co-working hub where everyone can just work together. And hopefully we can all like basically ship, you know, a year's worth of stuff in a month. Like, that's kind of the goal. That's like the 10x productivity boost that we want.
Yeah, there's one thing that you just cannot replace. Like you said, it's the whiteboarding, it's the brainstorming, and also this like a serendipity. There's a lot of, you know, random encounters that you have, even in the office, right? You know, this idea generation that you cannot replace. So yeah, I definitely, that's also one of the reasons why I want to come back to SF. I just feel like that's, you know, the amount of high quality people density wise is so much higher than anywhere else. And then the chance of having like new ideas is also much, much greater. What do you think is your, you know, biggest lessons that you've learned so far in Web3, you know, shifting from, you know, the big, you know, Web2 companies into Web3? What has, you know, it must be super different, you know, from, you know, the type of people you work with, as well as, you know, the working style, you know, so what's your biggest learning so far?
Yeah, I think we definitely like always on, fully global 24/7 is like a really big change. Like, I'm sure you're in like Telegram chats with people in Europe and Asia and all across the world where like, at any hour of the day, basically, there's like something that needs responding to or someone who's online. I feel like all the previous places I work, it was like very America centric, and even within that, like Bay Area centric. So I think the very global nature has been really interesting. And also getting to meet people from all across the world is really cool. And one big lesson has just been like how much talent there is out there that's truly global. Like, I think I grew up in America, and I previously had only really worked with people who had like pretty similar backgrounds to me, I would say, like for the most part American, or, you know, or people who are immigrants, but, you know, my parents are immigrants. And then, yeah, to see like totally random people in Eastern Europe or just really smart people in India or whatever, just also, you know, learning on the internet and like contributing open source and, you know, making PRs and seeing how really talented they all were was really, really cool and super humbling for sure. And really inspiring also to be like, oh, you can really come from anywhere and like learn anything. So yeah, that's been like a really big lesson, is like the global nature of everything and what's possible when you make everything open. And I think that, yeah, that is like one of the most awesome parts about crypto.
What about crypto Twitter? Like, do you think a great Web3 founder need to be on crypto Twitter?
That's a good question.
What about like a ZK? You know, because my idea of a ZK founder is has a NFT profile picture, and you know, is kind of, you know, the Twitter profile name is not their name. It's like a, you know, some kind of anon name. Yeah, like how important is it for, you know, crypto Twitter to be part of a great Web3 ZK founder?
Well, I mean, I like crypto Twitter because I think it's like funny and entertaining. Although you have to be careful because like that it, you know, you don't spend too much time on it. I think for crypto Twitter, one thing I've kind of learned or observed is it's really hard to like fake it. Like, I think if you're going to be on crypto Twitter and engage, I think you just have to be authentic. Like, the content has to be authentic. It has to, because that's what people resonate with. And it's really hard to like fake authenticity. I mean, definitionally. So I think for me, for example, a lot of the stuff I tweet about, is not even like ZK. Like, you know, I love crypto broadly. Like, I care about like the Ethereum roadmap. I, you know, there's like some of the other stuff that's going on I find like ridiculous, or like funny or whatever. So I think like engaging on crypto Twitter, for me at least, like my personal philosophy is like, it just has to be like whatever you're authentically interested in. And for me, like a lot of my tweets are about ZK because I am very like interested in ZK, of course. And I think it's like very important, and like I spend a lot of time thinking about it. If you're not the kind of person that's into crypto Twitter and like it doesn't come to you naturally or you don't like that stuff, then I think forcing yourself to do it is not really going to be like a winning strategy, because also like people will be able to tell that it's like super unnatural or like, you know, not interesting to you.
Yeah, totally. Do you think crypto Twitter's importance in crypto is increasing over the years, that, you know, since you joined crypto to now? I feel like the trend is it's playing a more and more important role. Actually, for AI also, even for Web2 AI, I was, you know, also I talked to a lot of AI people here in SF, and they all say that even for Web2 AI, it's becoming a bit memeified. And they had to, you know, coordinate some kind of influencer launch on Twitter, you know. So Twitter is very important now for Web2 AI. And also for, you know, Web3 in general, right? So why is that? And also, where is it going?
Interesting. So there's like AI KOLs or something.
Because, you know, for Web2 AI also, you know, it's becoming more of a kind of a narrative type of thing, right? Because AI companies also don't have like a long history of revenue, you know. So then a lot of it is like, oh, search, new search, AI search, you know, this, you know, then they also need to kind of make some, you know, buzz about it. And I'm sure you also see that there's a lot of bantering on, you know, crypto Twitter and also AI Twitter, right?
So yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like there's maybe some broader comment to be made about like where, you know, where our society is going and like also where most people get their information these days. Like, I feel like we've kind of disrupted, obviously, like the old media with, I mean, Twitter in some way is like a decentralized new media, right? Where it's like the individual person, you know, is kind of this new source of information, not this like curated old institution. So, I mean, maybe there's like a broader comment on like where our society is going. I think at the same, I mean, crypto Twitter obviously is very important, but at the same time, I think every year, like crypto becomes more and more real. Like, you know, you have more focus on real adoption. You have more focus on use cases. You have more focus on applications. You have more focus on like the tech that's actually working. And it's not just narratives and memes and stuff. Like, basically, I think as crypto converges to like actually providing real value and being more real, which I do think is very important, the role of all this stuff will probably like kind of decrease, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's like the metrics are the metrics. It doesn't really matter, like, you know, who's talking on crypto Twitter. And I feel like you even see this on crypto Twitter, where there can be even months or maybe even years where like a certain, you know, certain projects have like, you know, people talk about certain projects in a certain way, even though that like might not be actually correct. But then you do see like reality kind of like catching up in the end. And I feel like in the end, I feel like crypto Twitter usually does a pretty good job at like arriving at the ground truth, although the path there might be kind of convoluted. So, you know, for example, I feel like with Solana for years, it was like, oh, this isn't decentralized. This is just like, you know, FTX chain, whatever, SBF, like all this stuff. And then as like Solana got more adoption and, you know, people were like, oh, actually, like, I feel like Anatoly and their team is like, you know, really long term oriented. They're genuinely really good builders. They're great engineers. They're like actually building something that's very valuable. It's a really interesting, different thesis than like the Ethereum roll-up centric roadmap. Crypto Twitter, you know, now I feel like Solana is like the darling of crypto Twitter and everyone loves it. And like, I feel like that also reflects like how they've done super well with the adoption. And so I'm like always hopeful that like in the short term, there's always noise. But I do even see like in the time I've been in crypto, like convergence on what there's like ground truth, like in the end, even if it doesn't happen as fast as you may want.
Yeah. That I agree. Ground truth in the end, but a lot of like raging and overraging in the short term, it seems like it's becoming worse. It seems like this kind of headline, circulation and, you know, kind of this, you know, optimizing for overraging type of, you know, short-term volatility on Twitter is becoming actually, I feel it's becoming a problem these days. You know, who knows? Oh, by the way, speaking of Solana, are they still in SF or did they also kind of move away? Because they're like a prototypical SF company, right?
I think they still have their SF office. And I think like the founders are still here. But I think a lot of they're pretty distributed, I think, at this point.
Yeah. What are some big SF companies, crypto companies besides Succinct that, you know, are active in the community here?
So, I mean, Paradigm is based here and they have like a pretty strong base.
Yeah, this event over the weekend. Lots of people.
Oh, yeah. They had their Frontiers event, which was really excellent. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I know like the Phantom people have an office here. I'm not sure how many of them are here. I know 0x used to have an office here. I think Pantera has an
Zero
office
X
here.
Is OG. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of like older companies that have offices here, but then it's not super clear.
People
like,
are not here. Just office here, but people are not here.
Yeah. But we're trying to change that. Yeah.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Yeah. I think this residence thing is great because it brings people. Yeah. The raise that you guys did, the $55 million, congratulations on that. How do you plan on using this funding to further your mission and goals?
We did raise like our Series A a few months ago. I think at this point it was like 4 or 5 months ago. I think, yeah, as I mentioned, like building a ZKVM is very difficult.
Very expensive. It
requires a lot of work, requires a lot of people, requires very hard engineering. So I think for us, it's really about like, you know, building the best possible team and, you know, building the best ZKVM and, you know, getting people to use it and take everything in crypto. I like to say like ZK will upgrade the stack. Like everything in crypto kind of needs ZK to actually work well. Like I think so far we've had a bunch of like these patchwork solutions that like don't actually work or have bad trust assumptions or bad scaling properties or whatever. It's like now that ZK is finally easy, let's go take it and like upgrade the stack and make it used everywhere. Yeah, to do that, I think like we need a lot of people to like make SP1 faster and cheaper. Like we can always make it faster and cheaper because so then we can prove more things, or like we can always make the developer experience a lot better. We can always do more education. So yeah, the main goal is just to like use that money to like build the best team and yeah, use it to like make ZK really like go mainstream and be used everywhere. That's like our mission.
Yeah, you spoke about, you know, the open source nature of SP1. What are some advantages of this? You are open sourcing this, so everybody can just fork your code. What are some advantages? Now, also, how does it contribute to the broader development community?
Yeah, so SP1 is fully open source. Like, you know, you can see all the code. I think it has to be open source because like otherwise you don't know what's being proven. So SP1 is fully open source. But at the same time, like if you try to run SP1 on your laptop, it's not going to be a fun time. Like if you're trying to use SP1 to prove a rollup workload, you're not going to want to run that on a laptop. In fact, like as I mentioned, we have this GPU prover. And really for our customers, I think there's a really like positive sum, you know, relationship to be had where they can use SP1 and then we are building this like prover network to make it so that when they want to actually use SP1 for like really big workloads, they send proof requests to the prover network and then the network generates proofs and sends them back. And the idea is that like, you know, the network will be specialized. It'll have people running specialized hardware like GPUs and stuff like that. And all that stuff will be the network will be able to generate proofs more efficiently and like more cheap and more fast than you could do by yourself. And then the user gets like this one click experience where they don't have to like set up all this info. So it's like, even though SP1 is open source, I think there's still a lot of value that we and like our prover network can provide to users of it that they don't want to set up themselves. So I actually think like, yeah, even though it's open source doesn't mean that there's no value we can provide to make it easier to use is kind of how I think about it.
Got it. I want to discuss a little bit about the roles of investors. Now, you have great big VCs that participate in your round. Have you seen like the VC landscape shifting? And how do you, what do you think about the value addedness of, funds that, investing into projects these days versus before?
Yeah. So we worked with Paradigm for our seed and Series A. And yeah, I think we really love working with them. In particular, Georgios on their team, he's done a ton of open source Rust work, and it's super, super complementary to like the stuff we're building with SP1. So for example, Georgios recently, or at this point, not so recently, I think, announced Ref, which is like a Rust implementation of an Ethereum client. And then we took Ref and we ran it inside SP1 to generate proofs of Ethereum blocks. And like now it's like really easy to make a ZK rollup using Ref run in SP1. And as a part of that, getting Ref to run in SP1 was pretty easy, but like it required a lot of close work with the Ref team. So we worked very closely with them to get things merged into their repo that made it easy to compile and stuff like that. So that was like super value add because building Ref is a very, very difficult feat as well. So it's like huge value add. He was able to build that and unlock like the future of ZK rollups with like Rust and SP1. I mean, that's just like one very concrete example. There's other people on their team we talked to about more like thinking about BD or like strategy or just, in general, I think founding a company is like really difficult. So just even like advice or like support, like you're going through a tough time or there was like something like a fire to put out, and like just having someone to talk to about it. For VCs, like there can be very concrete value adds, like even research help or this open source stuff. And then there can be more like, honestly, like they're just very nice, supportive, friendly people who understand what you're going through, have seen stuff before, and can like help with the broader journey and like all the challenges that come with it. I'm super grateful to be working with them. They're really awesome. And they're based in SF, which is also awesome because like, we can see them.
Yep. Very cool.
Cool. So Uma, how does the roadmap look for, for you, like for the next 10 months or 1 year or so? Like what is the focus of your product?
I would say we have two main focuses right now. I think the biggest one is like, I think SP1 is awesome. Like it's super fast. It's already really cheap. It's very easy to use. Like honestly, sometimes even in our office, like using it is like a dream come true. Like I will like be writing some program, I'll run it and I'll be like, oh my God, it's really that fast. Like that's crazy. And so it's really getting people to use it. Like the adoption story of like, okay, now we have this tech, we built it, we really slaved away in our office for like a very long time, working very long nights. Like it's here, it's like ready to be used. Like let's get every rollup to use it. Let's get every bridge to use it. Let's really take everything in crypto that needs to use ZK and like let's upgrade everything. So yeah, I think adoption is a really big one. And then of course, I think we have like a long laundry list of ideas in our Notion doc on like how to make SP1 10x like faster, cheaper, better. And like just executing on that. Like, I think we have a lot of ideas, like algorithmic ideas on the cryptography side. We have a lot of ideas on the engineering side. We have a lot of ideas on like how to make better cloud infrastructure. So we have this really long list of ideas. And it's like, okay, yeah, let's like go, like, let's make it even better than it already is for like all of our current customers and all of our future customers. So yeah, those are like the two main focuses. I think thankfully, like ZK is like really straightforward in a way. Like, it's just so clearly so important that I feel really good that about if we just make SP1 10x better, it's going to be like really valuable and really important to like making crypto better, and like really important and hopefully like helps also the space be more scalable and like is like good for the broader space. So yeah, those are just our focuses.
Sounds great. Making SV1 10x better. Okay, so now we have the rapid fire and we have 4 minutes, so it's perfect timing. If you had to, so I'm going to just pick up one line from your previous answer because I was just tempted. So the biggest factor that you think will lead in crypto adoption, in one word, what would you say it is?
Better founders.
Okay, great. That's what we feature on this podcast. And now these are like some personal fun questions. So what's your go-to programming language?
Rust.
Okay. Which is the best book that you've read recently?
Tomorrow, Tomorrow, Tomorrow.
Oh, yes. I saw amazing reviews on Goodreads. Okay, so I'm going to pick that up. What was your first job in tech and at what age?
Oh, I think it was maybe in high school. I was like doing some like, well, I don't know. Does math count as tech? I was doing like random math research. and yeah, doing random like math simulations and like Sage and stuff.
You are actually the fourth founder on this podcast who started working at a very young age. Like when they were in high school, like 15, 16, they picked up some jobs. So that's cool. What's your favorite music to go to?
I like electronic music.
Cool. You should come to Berlin then sometime. Who was actually your most difficult hire for which role and why?
That's a good question. I think convincing my co-founder to, he actually dropped out of college in his senior year. I think, you know, I convinced him. I was like, ZK is awesome. Like, let's do this. Let's work together. I think that was the hardest one. Also the most worth it one. Yeah.
And how long did that take, like finding a co-founder?
Well, we had worked together just like on a project and we'd really, really enjoyed it. And then at some point it was like, oh, let's like turn this into a company and make it a real thing. And I don't know. There was like one conversation, you know, that I think was like the pivotal one. But yeah, you know, we'd worked together for months. So.
Okay. If for one day you have no internet, nothing, you're like offline, how would you like to spend your day? What's that hobby that you would love doing that doesn't involve technology?
Oh, I love skiing.
Nice. Do you do that every year?
I try to. With the company, it's a bit harder, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the last one. So what's your advice to 10 years younger Uma?
Maybe trust the process. Like if you work hard and always push yourself and always keep learning, then things will work out.
That's awesome. I think even in Web3, we all need to tell that to ourselves every day. Like, trust the process. We are going the right way. Thank you, Uma. This was so much fun. Sachi had to drop out because of like bad internet connection, but we tried our best to cover her questions. And thanks, Kenzie, for joining. This was a special SF-focused episode, so we'll have a nice angle. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Our editor, Steve, who helps us produce this podcast, and see you next time.